Ayup, how are you doing? We've had now then, we've had how do, and today we had Ayup. So I've got one last northern colloquialism for hello remaining. Once that's used, it's going to be necessary to find some more for future episodes. So if you know of other northern colloquial terms for hello, leave them in the comments or the reviews. So here we are, episode 3 of CHOP, Strength Through Vulnerability, the podcast I'm writing, recording and publishing, telling the story leading up to and following the amputation of my left arm. I don't know how many times in my previous 46 years on this planet I used the words amputee, amputated or amputation, but it will get nowhere near the number of times I've used them over this last year. Going to start this pod by sharing with you a really important moment in my post-op life, my first time out on my adapted knee board. Then, and I'm not sure how successful I'm going to be at it, I'm going to try and explain the title of this pod and the CHOPT brand ethos of Strength Through Vulnerability, where the idea came from, what the idea can be broken down to mean, and how it ties into the idea of tribes. I shared a post the other day around the publishing of episode 2 of the pod and how I wasn't overly pleased with the sound quality and production. But rather than re-record it, which would have delayed it being published, I put it out there, knowing it was a long way from perfect. But I did that as I wanted to publish episode 2, 7 days, 1 week after episode 1 aired. That was important to me as I saw it as showing up. I had a great chat with an old school friend the other day who, when we were talking about my fledgling podcast, said something along the lines of, if you continue to show up, then people, the listeners, will continue showing up. Showing up in terms of publishing a podcast means putting the hours into writing it. In the case of this one, which isn't going to be so centred around pre and post-op surgery, so not something I could solely write from experience, it's going to require some research around the topic before recording and publishing. So at the time of writing, it was Friday morning, and I'm showing up, getting started on researching and writing. Last Friday was a busy day. Busy day. I met up with the seamstress who's altering my clothes, taking off the left arm and adapting the gap accordingly. So I picked up 2 shirts, a sweater, a long sleeve tee and a jacket. She does a brilliant job, and the adapted clothes I now have feel far more comfortable to wear. Whilst tucking the left sleeve inside your top isn't the end of the world, if you've got the sleeve of both the sweater and also that of a jacket tucked inside, that's a lot of superfluous sleeves to be carrying around. So the adapted wardrobe is slowly taking shape, and the adapted clothes I have feel much more comfortable. Wearing clothes adapted to my needs means there's no hiding the fact that I'm minus a left arm. Walking to meet her meant a short walk across the front, taking in the bay vista. Looking out to sea, I could see there was a wave, a nice looking wave too. The go surfing seed was planted on this walk. We had a chat and a coffee. From our table by the window, I could still see nice looking lines stacked up out to sea. I thought it looked about 2 foot, a chest high wave, perfect easy peelers, ideal for taking the knee board out on its maiden voyage. I rang a mate of mine to see if he was keen. He was, so we were on. Walking back, I could see it was high tide, and you can't really surf the bay at high tide unless you're a bodyboarder. So I had a couple of hours to kill. So I got on it with recording the previous episode of the pod. I went and checked the surf again before getting suited up, and yeah, it looked good. So we're on, it's happening. First time out in the one-armed wetsuit on the adapted knee board. Wetsuits on, board in hand, we set off down the steps, surf looking good. It was at this point I started thinking to myself, it's a bit bigger than I thought. As we're nearing the water's edge, getting my flippers on, there's a few set waves breaking out the back. Gotta say, at this point, it was now looking considerably bigger than the 2 foot I previously thought it was. Anyway, we make it into the water. There's a little lull, a break in the waves, and we start our paddle out back. Getting out wasn't too bad, but it was now really obvious. It was about twice the size I thought it was. Much bigger than I'd have chosen for my first kneeboard session. I paddled for a few waves and could probably have got on them, but I backed out. I guess a sense of self-preservation kicked in. I'm bloody-minded and determined to get back surfing in some form, but I'm not crazy, throwing all caution to the wind. Because I've got to be realistic about the situation I now find myself in. I paddled for a few, and all the while I'm out there, I'm learning about the board, where the sweet spot is when paddling, managed a few duck dives, a technique used when paddling out whereby you force your board and yourself under the breaking wave. This allows the physical movement of the wave to shoot you out the other side of the onrushing cavalcade of water. I was only able to do this on feathering non-broken waves. I got caught inside after about half an hour or so. Sitting on the inside, where you're nearer to the shore, has the advantage of allowing you to pick up smaller inside waves, which can often break nicer than the larger outside set waves. Anyway, I was caught on the inside as a series of outside set waves came rolling in. I couldn't duck dive these, so I had to, and I'm ashamed to say it, ditch my board, and I just sunk myself under the six oncoming waves. Ditching was okay, there wasn't anyone around, so it was safe. But after coming up, following the sixth wave, I was goosed. I was properly blowing. I knew this signal that the safest and most sensible thing I could now do was get out. I caught a broken wave and rolled my board in prone, which was fun. Although had I had the strength to pull myself to my knees, I would have rolled it in on them, but I didn't. There was literally nothing left in the tank. It was a bit of a reality check, an eye-opener. There was a part of me that half thought, I'll paddle out, stroke into my first wave, pop to my knees and ride it in effortlessly. Maybe had it been half the size, 2 foot, not 4 foot, that could have happened. Should probably mention here to those listeners who don't surf or who aren't surf widows how the height of waves is calculated. The height of a wave is calculated from the back of the wave, but the face of a wave is roughly twice the size of the back of a wave, meaning a 2 foot wave has a 4 foot face, chest to shoulder height. A 4 foot wave is actually an 8 foot face, so it's overhead. There's a big difference from a 2 foot day to a 4 foot day. There was a sense of disappointment getting out of the water, but I'm also able to take from it plenty of positives. I got out, had the opportunity to get a feel for the board. My wetsuit was, as the name suggests, snug, and perhaps more importantly, I made it back unscathed. More than anything though, I'm keen to get in again, just on a smaller day. So, as I mentioned at the start, I'm going to try and talk about the whole strength through vulnerability thing, explaining what it's all about, what it means to me, and also about tribes, hopefully linking the two together. The first mention of tribes I heard came last summer in the lead up to my operation. And it was an old mate of mine's brother who in those weeks leading up to the operation became like a guardian angel, seemingly knowing when I was struggling and messaging me when I most needed it. He mentioned the idea of tribes, saying, we are all just walking the world, trying to find our tribe. We pick up and drop off as we go. Some stay, some don't, but whatever happens, we must always pass the baton on. So that was the first time I'd really heard or thought about tribes. For 40 years, one of my tribes has been the surfing tribe. I've always loved being in that tribe. I've met lifelong friends through surfing and have enjoyed plenty of good days riding waves with those friends, great trips and holidays away, and plenty of adventures with those in that tribe. Whilst I'll always be in the surfing tribe, or at least I hope I will be, following what's happened, I've come into contact with other tribes, the Para Adaptive Surf tribe and the kneeboarding tribe. They've been super supportive and welcoming, picking me up as they go. These are tribes I'm keen to be a part of, ultimately because I want to be a part of them. But I've never really thought of leading my own tribe. After speaking on the radio, in amongst the comments I received was one which read, "Wonderful to hear a man express his strength through vulnerability." At the time, the idea of CHOP being a brand was still little more than an embryo, but every brand needs an ethos, and there was something about strength through vulnerability that resonated with me. Back in the days when I was teaching, one of the TAs who worked in my class described me as a curious mix of testosterone and vulnerability. That comment always stuck with me. I don't know why, perhaps because it was an accurate assessment of my personality. I'm trying to be the best version of myself that I can. It's not something I'm always successful at doing, but I am trying. Perhaps I am the best version of myself when I'm vulnerable. I don't know, but I think one of the traits I have that has helped me process, accept, and be able to move forward positively after the CHOP is that of speaking honestly and openly about how I'm feeling. As I said in the first episode, there have been some really dark moments and dark days since August. In October, I reached out and got some counselling to try and make sense of everything that had gone on. For counselling to have any effect, you need to be honest with yourself and with who you're speaking to. You need to be vulnerable. Speaking openly and honestly involves putting yourself in a place of vulnerability, or at least I think it does. So I thought I'd see if speaking openly and honestly correlates with the definition of vulnerability. The dictionary defines vulnerability as the quality or state of being exposed to the possibility of being attacked or harmed, either physically or emotionally. So yeah, speaking honestly and openly does leave you exposed to being attacked, as does speaking on the radio or on a podcast. Once you've raised your head above the parapet, I guess you're fair game. By putting yourself out there, people can comment. That's their right. Luckily today, I've only received positive, constructive feedback. But I have to accept that won't always be the case. And I already feel I know how some people may choose to attack me. To explain how and why strength and vulnerability became a thing for me, I need to segue into talking about the beginnings of CHOP, the brand, and how that became a thing. After I'd shared on the socials the prototype CHOP garments I'd received, a few people began asking where they could buy them. I'd never thought for a minute CHOP would be anything other than something I'd wear. The rationale for having my own brand was a simple one. I wanted to buy clothes at wholesale prices, so when I had the left sleeve removed and adapted, the cost would be similar to that of something I'd bought in the shops. That was it. But when people, well, I say people, when friends started asking to order them, I started taking orders. I did 2 or 3 orders for maybe a dozen garments each time. I was incredibly grateful to all those people who wanted to support me and show solidarity with me. But one weekend, 2 old friends came down on a mercy mission to tidy up some window reveals that required plastering. So they come down on the Friday evening. They'd ordered a few pieces from the embryonic CHOP range. I like the designs, that's why I wear them. But seeing 2 proper old friends slipping into their CHOP tees elicited a weird reaction in me. Far from feeling stoked, a part of my brain jumped straight to what someone, viewing what I'm doing negatively, might say, that I'm cashing in on having my arm chopped off. That thought, that sentiment really took root in my brain, that yeah, there could be an optic whereby most likely people who don't know me see what I'm doing as trying to make a quick buck from what has happened. For me, this wasn't ever about putting an inflated markup on some t-shirts to make a quick buck. However, that negative thought grew from a seed and the roots began to take hold. Such was the speed with which they grew. By the Monday morning, I decided this wasn't something I could move forward with, as I'd never be comfortable or at ease knowing that what I'm doing could be viewed by some as cashing in on losing my arm. I phoned the CHOP design elf that morning to share this news, and he was brilliant. He talked me around, but in that chat I'd said to him, I probably feel more at ease promoting strength through vulnerability as a concept, as a movement sort of thing. I outlined these same concerns to my good friend at BWJ Artist. Check him out on Instagram. And he made a really good point. To be cashing in on having your arm chopped off, mate, you'd need to be making some money, and you're not. Which was a very good point. Those two conversations really helped me overcome the concerns and doubts I had around what others may think my motivation for doing all this is. And perhaps more importantly, they gave me the belief to carry on doing something I've really enjoyed doing and to remain vulnerable. When I look at the things I enjoy in life, a lot of them require that the individual puts themselves into a position of vulnerability. Surfing for one. Last Thursday, I put myself in a position where I was exposed to the possibility of being harmed, or worse. That risk of getting hurt is a part of surfing, as it is with skateboarding. When you watch really good skaters skate, they constantly put themselves in vulnerable positions. What's great about going down to the skate park is you see how many times they're willing to fail, to risk hurting themselves in pursuit of their goal, their only ambition to land that trick. To be a good surfer or skater, it's essential to place yourself in a position of vulnerability, one of physical harm. When you see the final video clip of them skating, of that amazing trick they've landed, it's never come easily. There might have been 50 slams, painful slams, that went into securing the desired outcome. To be a really good surfer or skater requires unbelievable physical and mental resilience. Ultimately, they embrace vulnerability. Last Tuesday evening, I went to watch my daughter and the band she's in, the Flits, play their first ever gig at a Battle of the Bands night. They were incredible, and seeing the smile and joy written large on my daughter's face after their first song was truly priceless. But that moment would never have happened had she, had her bandmates, and all the other young folk who performed that night not been brave enough to step onto stage and perform. They had to be vulnerable. They ran the risk of being harmed through either the audience's reaction to their performance or the comments others might make. But they were brave enough to step up, and they were brilliant. Seeing them receive the recognition their performance deserved in terms of the audience's positive reaction was truly wonderful. Being in a band, being an artist, being a writer, a podcaster, all link into vulnerability. The band who aren't willing to be vulnerable will never share their songs with anyone. They'll never step on stage for they fear the possibility of being harmed emotionally, through critical words or comments, and hopefully not physically. But I've been at gigs where I've seen one of the band take a drink lob from the crowd in their face. It's the same for the artist who never displays their work. Sharing the fruits of your endeavour requires vulnerability, willingly putting yourself in a place whereby you can be harmed through the words or thoughts of those critical of your endeavour. For me, writing and recording this podcast has required the bravery to be vulnerable. In my first pod, I spoke about all the reasons not to do it, but I did do it. I put myself into a vulnerable position where I could have been harmed through criticism or negative feedback. Publishing and seeing my podcast on the various directories felt incredible, the reward for my willingness to be vulnerable. Since December, since speaking on the radio, since I put myself into the vulnerable position of sharing my story over the airwaves, which was a great experience, the intrinsic value of being vulnerable is not lost on me. I sobbed for a solid 2 hours or more following that radio interview. But the overall feeling afterwards was a positive one. I shared my story, and fortunately, those who listened were positive in their responses. My vulnerability was rewarded, and ultimately, it's that experience that has given me the belief that I can do a podcast that I'm really enjoying doing. And I'm enjoying doing it for my own approval and validation. One of the best things to come from losing my arm is that I've reconnected with lots of old friends. I've been fortunate in my life that I've met and am friends with plenty of interesting, talented and knowledgeable people. The old school friend I mentioned at the start of this episode, the one who mentioned the notion of showing up, also put me onto Seth Godin. If you're like me and you've never heard of Seth Godin either, Google describes him as an entrepreneur, a former dot-com executive, an author, and public speaker. A few weeks ago, I shared a post on Facebook asking people a few market research questions required for a grant funding application I was working on. My old school friend wrote this in response to my post. Ever heard of Seth Godin? If you've got a product and an online shop, you've got a stall on a global berry market. He shared a link to Seth Godin speaking about tribes. He signed off by saying, "You belong to many tribes that would love to buy your product." I've listened and watched the tribes we lead a good few times, where Seth Godin explains how we're all looking to make connections to find our tribes. And it's been incredibly enlightening and resonates perfectly with my dream of creating a tribe around the idea or concept of strength through vulnerability. Of tribes, he says, a tribe is a group of people connected by a culture, an idea, a costume, a leader, a goal. These tribes are everywhere around us, but there only used to be three tribes in our lives: a spiritual tribe, a work tribe, and a community tribe. He goes on to give various examples of tribes. These examples perfectly illustrate how people from all walks of life are part of tribes, not because they're forced to, because they want to. Earlier in this episode, I mentioned that I'd never dreamt of leading my own tribe. But that said, I'd said to another old mate, one of those who came down on the Plastering Mercy mission, that I'd feel more comfortable in promoting strength through vulnerability as a concept or as a movement. It's taken a lot for me to write and share this. It's meant putting myself into a vulnerable position as, who am I to lead a tribe or a movement? Godin poses this question saying, whose job is it to tell everybody how to be in sync? Answering simply, yours. It's your job to connect people who want to be connected, to invent a culture on purpose, to challenge people to go to the next level, to communicate, to commit, and to be clear on how you do it. People want to be connected. As self-aggrandizing as this sounds, that's what I'd like CHOPT and Strength Through Vulnerability to become. A tribe, a culture that's invented on purpose, a movement that sees the vulnerabilities we all have as strengths and promotes it. I only became aware of Dame Deborah James towards the end of her life. I read an article about her. In it, she spoke about her fears as she neared the end of her life, of going to sleep and the fear of not waking up again. This resonated massively with me, given I had the same fears of going to sleep in surgery and of not waking up. Through her podcast, You, Me and the Big C, and her work as a journalist and campaigner, she created a movement, Rebellious Hope. When I see someone wearing a Rebellious Hope t-shirt, I now know they're part of Deborah James's tribe. This is my dream, connecting people, inventing a culture and promoting a movement. Godin says, we like doing what other people are doing. That's why humanity works. That's why culture works. The culture and the movement isn't for the mass market, says Godin. It's not all people. Just our people, we want to be in sync with our tribe. You don't need everyone. You just need 1,000 true fans, 1,000 people, 1,000 people who care enough. They will get you to the next round and the next round. That means the idea you create, the product you create, the movement you create, isn't for everyone. It's not a mass thing. That's not what this is about. What it's about instead is finding the true believers. So there it is. I hope I've given some insight, some clarity into the CHOPT tribe and what expressing strength through vulnerability means to me. I suppose it boils down to leaving our ego behind, being vulnerable enough to be open and honest about our hopes, our fears and our dreams, to open ourselves up to failure, knowing, as I'm learning as I try to surf again, that failure is a part of the journey to success. Let me know your thoughts on the tribe, the culture and the movement in the comments or the reviews. Be interested to know what people think. With that, I'm going to bring to a close episode 3. But before I do, I thought I'd give a little update on the phantom limb, or ghost arm as I call it. It's quite relaxed at the moment. It's not at its usual 90 degree angle. It's actually feeling quite straight, running almost parallel to my body. My ghost hand, however, is quite awake. I can really feel my thumb and the fingers are sort of half open, half closed. One last thing, I have my second surf on my kneeboard. Again, bigger than I'd thought. But I got out again. Made a couple of duck dives under broken waves. For the first time, I caught an unbroken green wave and got to my knees. I was kneeboarding. Getting to my knees just sort of happened. I thought back to how I did it and I can't really remember. So I'm seeing that as a positive. As last week, I wasn't entirely sure how I'd get to my knees. Hopefully next time, I'll get two waves. As always, thanks for listening. Go steady. I'm out.